chickens in the houses, they got chickens in the trees, chicken in the pots, the Mottawokta, Petaloomies, out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Now Marvin got me started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20, and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Chicken in the morning, it's chicken in the night. Weren't for chicken, Petaluma never would have reached its height. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, smart talk about food, wine, and farming in the North Bay and beyond here on KRCB. I'm Michelle Anna Jordan, live in the studio, and today is a pretty special day for lots of reasons. We had rain. How wonderful is that? And how wonderful that it came today when we turned the clocks back to real time, sensible time.
Extra hour of sleep time.
Yes, yes. I woke up at 1 this morning. How's that? But still, I loved looking at the clock and, you know, oh, it's an hour earlier than I thought. Beautiful day at the farmer's market. Didn't wear a hat, didn't use an umbrella. Just loved that rain coming down on me. So it sort of marked the ending of, and the beginning of a lot of things. Probably have tomatoes for a couple more weeks. And I'm not doing the show tonight that I thought I was going to do. It is Mouthful's 20th anniversary. And my usual guest on any anniversary, I think for 16 or 17 out of the 19 that have come before, I have had Steve Garner as my guest because he was the very first guest on Mouthful back when it started on Thursdays at noon in our little tiny construction trailer of a studio. And he has come back almost every year. Tonight he is flying or has already landed Chicago, I think. I'm not positive. To visit his brother. So we will have Steve on at another time. And also, I got kind of sick. So the popping of champagne corks and all the hoopla that was going to go with the anniversary celebration has been postponed. We're going to have a live celebration at the Sebastopol Grange. You will be hearing more about it. It's probably going to be the first Sunday in February. It is going to be a party, a dance party, and a mini market where we will have some special vendors selling a variety of things that we talk about here on Mouthful, and then each of the vendors will be on the show that we record there at the Sebastopol Grange. So stay tuned for news about that. For a while, we were having movie nights on Mouthful Anniversary. That was really fun, and really thank the Rialto Cinemas when they were on Summerfield for doing that. But things evolve. We evolve with it. So we're going to talk, and I'm going to talk, and Mary is going to talk. She's going to feed me topics. But before she does that, I want to talk about my little getaway. I went away this last week. I left Sebastopol on Tuesday, and I came home Saturday afternoon. I went to the big metropolis of Casadero, where there are two firehouses, a bakery, a general store, a post office, and a hardware store. And thanks so much to Mark Weiss of Raymond's Bakery, who very kindly put me up in one of the cottages there. It's Raymond's Bakery / Elam Grove. And there are, there's the Baker's Loft, and there's two or three other accommodations right there at the bakery. And then just about an eighth of a mile down the road, there's Paradise Grove Cottage. And that is where I and the pups stayed for a desperately needed getaway. Spent a lot of time curled up in bed reading. I'm reading Patti Smith's newest memoir, The M Train. It's just so wonderful, and it was the perfect thing to have all the scents and sounds of the redwoods, which were very, very thirsty. Everything seemed so very dry and thirsty. Thrilled we got the rain today, but you could still hear the woodpeckers and various birds and things falling, and reading Patti Smith and sipping tea. The puppies loved it. And then the bakery is open only Friday afternoons, and then Saturday from 8 to 3, and Sunday from 8 to 3. On Friday, it's open from 3 until 9, and it's community pizza night, and they have live music. And I thought it was packed, and Mark said, this is nothing. This is actually really a slow Friday night, because people are probably out at Halloween parties and such. So I was feeling a little bit better on Friday night. Just had some weird tummy upset. So I went down, and Joey wanted to stay home. Lark wanted to go. So she curled up on her little rug out in front, and I had some pizza. I had a nice wine from Wild Hog, which is up in the Fort Receiview Appalachian. They are growing Montepulciano grapes. I had no idea. And I had a nice pizza, or had a portion of a nice little pizza, and heard a great band. Edge of Town. Have you heard of them?
No.
Edge of Town band. I think they're five people, stand-up bass.
What kind of music?
Fiddle, you know, country.
Sort of bluegrass.
Americana country.
Okay, right.
Really nice vocals. Seemed everybody was singing, but it's a woman, great voice, great stand-up bass, dobro, fiddle player, anything with a fiddle gets me. And, you know, I stayed until their last song and then walked on home and went to bed. But, you know, if you're up for a road trip on a Friday night, it doesn't take that long. It took me probably 40 minutes from Sebastopol. And, you know, straight.
It may be a little bit more of a challenge now that it's darker earlier.
Yeah.
That's, if you don't know the area.
Yeah. You might want to make a day trip of it, get there early, and then stay.
And put it on your calendar for next summer when the sun is highest in the air.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, it's also, I love this time of year in the redwoods. So anyway, that's what I did for the last few days. It was a really very, very pleasant getaway. And, you know, even if you don't go for the music, if you find yourself out there on a weekend, just, you know, it's about five miles from, 116, about 5 miles off 116. If you're headed out to Jenner, I always think that I've passed it, but it's about 5 miles after the town of Monterio. And you can go one of two ways. You can take Casadero Highway, or before that, if you want, you can take Austin Creek Road, which is interesting. I had never been on Austin Creek Road before. And
is that the one that goes up by Rio Nido? Or
No. You go like you're going to Jenner, through Guerneville, through Monterio, and you're headed towards the coast. And maybe a mile, I'm not sure, 2 miles before you get to Casadero Highway, there's a turnoff for Austin Creek Road. And I was amazed at how many houses. There's a lot of houses out there. And it's not a development, you know, not a bunch of houses that all look the same. But it just made me think, God, you know, there were so many towns in Sonoma that are no longer, or there's just little remnants of them. Cunningham out off of 116 between Sebastopol and Cotati. Preston, and I don't know if Preston is even still there, but a lot of these old towns. So it's sort of fun to take the back roads and see Sonoma County that way.
Well, and so many of them also, I mean, like Guerneville comes to mind, they were summer places for, you know, decades for generations of families. Mm-hmm. And then for whatever reason, I mean, that used to be kind of like over the hills and far away. And then people started living there year round, either because they retired or because they couldn't afford to buy farther in and or because they just liked living in the Redwoods.
I think up through the 50s and maybe even the early 60s, Rionito, Guerneville, and Monte Rio were exactly that. I know my family went on little family vacations, and I think there was a boat. I remember riding on a boat with a red and white striped canvas cover on the boat. I remember almost drowning in the Russian River, my introduction to Sonoma County. I was rescued and revived.
This is good.
But we stayed in a cabin for 7 days, and I think I was 3, or not quite 3, but I remember it very vividly.
And one of my father-in-law's cousins had a house that, you know, I'm sure it was just a small summer cottage, and they had been there for, you know, generations. And I was there once, you know, sort of, you know, in the middle of the summer. And it was the kind of place where mom and the kids would go up for the summer, and then dad, of course, would be working.
Right.
And then we'd go up on the weekends.
Yeah, right. And then there were also, there were the day resorts. There were big dances. If you look at, say, I think some of one of Gayla Baron's books, probably Santa Rosa 20th Century Town, though I'm not positive, but I think it was that. There's pictures of the dances taking place in Guerneville and Rionito. And I think Corbell has some of those historic photos as well. And people came to Guerneville. People went to, I think, Asti. They also went to the town of Kellogg, which is in Knights Valley. You have to go through Napa County to get there, the edge of Calistoga, but then you continue up, and 7 miles, you're back in Sonoma County, and that's where the town of Kellogg was. And people would take stagecoaches up, and they would to take the waters.
Right, exactly. The springs, the spas.
Yeah.
Well, I know that where Rionito, the theater is now, you know, the music venue is now, used to be a dance. My in-laws met there.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that was where they first encountered each other. They both loved to dance. And unfortunately, rumor has it that once they were married, my mother-in-law said, well, you know, how come you never take me dancing anymore? My father-in-law said, dancing's for looking. I'm not looking anymore.
That is one of the great tragedies of life.
I know.
It's one of the things I really miss is going out dancing and not knowing necessarily what's going to happen and who's going to ask you to dance. We need to do more of that.
Right. And I mean, one of the things I think is gratifying now, and this is true about going out to restaurants too, by the way, is that there is much less of a stigma of around people going out by themselves to have a meal or to go dancing.
Yeah.
You know, I've been to events where women will dance with each other just because they want to get out there and dance.
Exactly. I've done that my whole life.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's like, why not?
Yeah. And this whole thing that we're talking about, an earlier time, it's one of the things that made me fall in love immediately with Francis Coppola Winery, because he really brought back that with his winery park, with a swimming pool and bocce courts and tables set up for board games. And not only did he set it up that way, but when it didn't start out that way, because it was, you know, kind of the puke on your shoes crowd, you know, lots of people in tiny bikinis getting drunk and all that, he slashed the attendance. He said, this is not what I want this place to be. I want this to be for families. And instead of going to maximum attendance, he cut it in half. He doesn't pack them in like they would allow him, like the fire department who decides that. So, you know, families go.
You know, it's interesting because in a way, what you're doing is showing all the different sides of exactly what you started out talking about, which is the difference between then and now, 20 years ago to now. Mm-hmm. And I mean, in some cases, the changes that we're discussing have happened over a greater time than 20 years.
Sure.
But it's a constant manifestation of sort of the Mandela.
Yeah.
It just keeps moving on.
Everything old is new again as new generations discover things. And
I know. Now is when I really wish I'd held on to those granny dresses we wore in high school. And then again, maybe not.
I probably still have a few of mine.
Well, I distinctly remember seeing a picture of my father wearing a paisley tie at my high school graduation, and I understand those are back in style now.
Oh, my.
I know, isn't that a
surprise? As long as they're not too wide.
Right, yeah.
I think on that note, it's time for a musical break here on Mouthful.
I hear you. Okay, let's see what we can come up with here.
One of my favorite songs by the Handsome Family. And it's, yeah, it's just, it's a great, I forget the album it's from, but look them up, the Handsome Family. Very haunting new country, I guess you could say. So what are we talking about next?
Well, we're going to talk about some of the events that are coming up.
Oh, okay.
Because I know
oh,
this is the time of year when there are lots of food and wine related events, and who would know better about them than you?
Well, what we're going to talk about now is my events.
Sounds like a good place to start.
Yes. Next Sunday, November 8th, I will be at the West End Farmers Market, which congratulations to that market. They just had their 100th market day today, and it was a great market. It's a wonderful market. It's one of those things that the second it opened, I think 3 years ago, it was an instant success like it had always been there. So I will be there with probably seven book titles, my seven most recent books, and I will be... I never show up without something to feed you, so I will have some yummy things to eat, maybe some yummy things to drink, and I think we're going to have a special raffle. I'm not 100% positive, but it's looking like the market is going to purchase two tickets to my November 10th dinner at Spinster Sisters. The next Tuesday, and they're going to raffle off those two seats. So that's November 8th at the Farmers Market West End on Donahue Street. Takes place right adjacent to the De Turk Round Barn and Park, rain or shine. And you'll have a chance. I'm going to have some, if it's not raining, I will have some special gift wrap there, my special Good Cooks gift wrap. If you want to buy signed copies and have me wrap them on the spot, I will try to do that. And then, you know, raffle tickets for the upcoming dinner. And then the dinner is at Spinster Sisters, that wonderful restaurant right in the heart of the SoFA District, the south of A Street Arts District. They have been doing, they did two in October, I think, maybe three. They've joined with Book Passage of Corte Madera to do author dinners. And so we are doing, we're going to have, I think, six titles there, but we're taking, the menu is from two. So we're doing three appetizers and then three little salads to start. And then the main course is going to be my chicken a la diavolo from the Salt and Pepper book with farro. The farro with lemon and the world's newest olive oil that is just coming out. And black pepper zucchini. And for dessert, we're going to have gelato Modena, which is the one way I really like to use balsamic vinegar, and that is to make a gelato with some black pepper in it, and then it's served with roasted strawberries with black pepper. And you get your choice of a book, either the Good Cook's Book of Salt and Pepper or the Good Cook's Book of Oil and Vinegar will be your choice with your ticket to the dinner. And if you want to go to that, you should go to bookpassage.com and sign up, and I think you even pay. You do everything. It's $95, but that includes a book, that includes dinner, and that includes wine with dinner. So...
And is there a limit on how many people? I mean,
we don't have to worry about that right now.
Okay. So in other words, just in case, get your reservations in early.
Yeah, get your reservations in early. It's always better. It helps us plan. And then coming up at the end of the month, and I don't know the date. I don't know, Mary, if you can. What do you know the date of the day after Thanksgiving?
Yes, because Thanksgiving is actually the 26th, and so
it'll be the 27th.
Right.
Oh, okay. So on November 27th, I'm going to team up with Worth Our Weight, the culinary apprenticeship program there on Haman Drive across from Montgomery High School, and we're going to have the Good Cooks Holiday Bazaar. And let's see, don't call when we're talking because we're also answering the phone. If you need to call us when there's a song playing, okay? Thank you. So anyway, we're going to do a holiday bazaar. I will have more details about that next week when Evelyn Cheatham, the executive director of Worth Our Weight, and I get it in place. But I will be selling all of my most recent books, all seven titles. I will have Mouthful Special Gift Wrap. I'm also going to have some some foods for sale. I'm going to have my gamacho, which is toasted sesame seeds with salt and seaweed. I'm going to have one or two flavors of shrub, which we've talked about quite a bit here, and probably some other things, and then worth our weight as well. I make the most fabulous jams and jellies. We will have some of that. We'll probably have some membrillo from my quince trees. So it'll be a great way to come out and say hi and support Worth Our Weight and support me as I sort of not exactly reinventing what I do, but branching out, you could say, with some new ventures. And this is a little bit of a start to that.
Right. Not to mention the fact that it is right before the holiday season.
Right.
And so you can support Chef Michelle, you can support Worth Our Weight, and you can do some Christmas shopping and enjoy some wonderful food and delicacies. What's not to like?
Yeah. And you don't have to go deal with all of those crazy crowds.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah. You know, like I don't shop from about now until not in, you know, the big stores. It's just too crazy.
And I mean, even though the internet is your friend, sometimes you want that home touch.
You do. You know, so you got to support, we've got to support our brick and mortar neighbors. You know, we really don't want them to vanish.
Now, Michelle, you said something about, you know, your choice of books. Tell us a little bit more about your books, because I understand you've been rewriting them and they're now all available. Is that correct?
Yes, they are, though not necessarily everywhere. And what I always tell people, before you go to Amazon, go to your local bookstore or even cookware store, like Cultivate a Home in Sebastopol has been really supportive of these new books. And if they don't have my book and you're in Sonoma, they don't have a copy of my book that you want and you're in Sonoma County, just throw a little hissy fit. You know, that makes me really happy. So what I'm considering my newest releases are Vinaigrettes and Other Dressings, which came out in April of 2013, but it is still in print. I think it still has a lot of life left into it. And then last November, I came out with More Than Meatballs.
Right, I remember when that came out.
The Feminization of Meatballs. And then after that, let's see, in May, the new Good Cook's Book of Tomatoes and the new Good Cook's Book of Mustard came out. And then in July, The new is not in the title. I wanted it in the title, and they said no.
But you're talking about is the new version of those titles.
Yes, and they're rewritten. Portions of them are not, and some of the recipes I carried through, but they are, all of the recipes are updated. I'd say 50 to 75% of the recipes are brand new. There was no photography in the previous books, and there's lots of photography in the new books. Anyway, I should jump in. Before I go into those details, in July, it was the Good Cook's Book of Salt and Pepper that came out, the Good Cook's Book of Oil and Vinegar, and then changed the title on the final one. It was originally called the Good Cook's Book of Days. It is now called the Good Cook's Journal, and it has recipes, and it's a way to organize. I do the organizing for you. There are sections to inspire your seasonal menus. There's places for notes. There's places to write down your favorite recipes. You know, you have a favorite recipe, enjoy of cooking, and you can never remember what it is. I have a place for you to enter that. So I have a place for you to enter the birthdays and the loves and hates, food-wise and drink-wise, of your closest relatives and friends. I have 12 to 18, I forget, of what I think are the most important recipes to know by heart, including how to boil water, because you would be surprised.
Oh, no, I wouldn't. My late father, God bless him, could not boil water to save his life.
Yeah, and I meet a lot of young people. I don't really know. How do you tell when water's boiling? So I give a nice lesson on how to boil water, how to perch.
Bubbles are your first clue.
Yeah. How to poach an egg perfectly. Mm-hmm. How to make a salad, how to roast a chicken, just simple things like that. How to cook all of your basic grains, all things that I think after you've done them two or three times, especially if you've done them when you're first on your own, if you know all these recipes without opening a book, you can cook your way through the work week easily. You know, very easily.
And I think that's a good point to mention, because those of us of a certain age probably came from a time period where one or both of two things happened. First of all, either we took home economics in junior high or high school, and or we had a parent at home who was cooking. and from whom we learned. And for many people, neither of those things is true.
No, that doesn't happen so much anymore.
Not at all.
People take, instead of taking home ec, I didn't take home ec in my school. It was divided into sewing and foods. I took sewing in seventh grade, and I still have those awesome sewing skills I developed then. And then in ninth grade, I took foods.
We didn't have foods. We just had sewing.
Oh, yeah, we had foods, and we each had little kitchens. And, you know, it. I learned a lot there, not necessarily about cooking itself, but about the table.
Right.
And enjoying sitting at a table. It's the first place I ever drank coffee. She let us make coffee this one day, and we all sat around, and we just all became very convivial.
One of the things that I think is important about books like yours, where it's sort of a... It's not exactly cooking for dummies, but it's survival skills. And it's not just how do you prepare the food, but a great deal about nutrition, because that's something else that isn't being taught.
About nutrition, and not just about nutrition. My books are not collections of recipes. All of my books have substantial narrative before you get to the recipe section. And I teach you to cook. I teach you how to organize your kitchen. I talk to you about how to hold a knife, how to buy a knife. That is one of the most important things to make you happy in the kitchen. If you have one knife
that's really good that you love.
That you love. And most people never talk to you about this part. You need to have a knife that feels good in your hand. And you're the only one who can tell. And that tends not to be what people who are selling you the knives ever talk about. They talk about the blade, you should have a forged blade, you know, you should have a high-end...
Full tang, hold it.
Yeah, good blade. But then the next thing is you need to hold a whole bunch of knives in your hand so that, this one feels good. You should be able... Cooking should be pleasurable. You should be able to say, make Thanksgiving dinner, if you're the one that's going to do that, without your hand ever getting that ache it gets when you're holding a knife with a handle that's too small or that is just clumsy in your particular hand.
And for those of us who are left-handed, that's particularly important because that's another thing that doesn't get paid a lot of attention.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And then you should also have wooden cutting boards, and I talk about that. Get rid of your plastic cutting boards. We were sold a real bill of goods on that in the 80s. And in fact, people in the health inspectors, restaurant inspectors, were going around Sonoma County restaurants in the 80s. And they were trying to make everyone get... They were making people get rid of their wooden cutting boards and demanding that they have that hard plastic. Well, University of Wisconsin, I believe it was, came out with several studies, and since then there have been several other studies. The best cutting boards for safety and, you know, not getting bacteria that grows, the very best ones are the hard food grade wood. They actually have antibacterial qualities that are natural in the wood. You can put one of those plastic ones in a dishwasher, and that was one of the things that the health department liked, was that you could put it into a dishwasher. The problem is, in these tests, they found that something like 40 to 60% of bacteria remained in the plastic cutting boards when just washing a wooden cutting board intelligently, 97% of bacteria was automatically gone. And the other thing that was never considered then, and it's extremely important, is plastic cutting boards ruin your knives.
That's true.
They grow dull so quickly. So wood is softer, even hardwood is softer than that plastic, and they're good for your knives. Some people think it's important to have one cutting board for vegetables, another one for meats. That's up to you. I think if you have good hygiene practices, you know, you're fine if you only have room or space for one cutting board. I probably have 15 because, right. You know, I take them, you know, all different kinds. But that's something that's really important. Anyway, I go into all these sorts of things in my books. I do that pretty extensively in the vinaigrettes and other dressings, which really should have had a different title. It's not a book about salad dressings. It has lots of salad dressings in it, but it has a chapter on salads, and also you get about 250 recipes total if you count the seasonal variations. And it's really Vinaigrettes on everything, as Clark Wolf likes to call it.
Well, you know, you were saying that it was released 2 years ago, and you hope that you think it's still relevant. Well, especially in this county, people are going to be eating salads for a long, long time.
Sure. But, you know, things like a really nice, simple, say, lemon vinaigrette, which is my default vinaigrette, on grilled fish, steamed fish. There's one of my favorite dressings has two ingredients. You can make it four ingredients if you want it to be fancy. It has two ingredients, soy sauce and lime juice. If you want to get fancy, you can add a little bit of crushed red pepper and a little bit of sesame oil. But that's it. You make it in under 1 minute. It is so good on a grilled steak salad.
And it's very easy.
It's easy. It's healthy. Don't make much of a mess. So,
you know what we ought to do is we probably ought to give whoever that poor person that was trying to call a chance to call back.
That's a good idea. Yes. We're going to take a musical break, and if you still want to call us, give us a call now.
That sounds like a good plan. Oops. And, of course, now all of these have gone to sleep because they said, you're ignoring us. We're not going to play. So we'll take care of that in just a minute here.
Temperamental CD players. Gotta love
them. No, they're like people.
Them.
They don't like being ignored for long periods of
time.
There
you go.
Okay, let's see. No, it's not. We already did that one. So
we're almost there.
Really? Oh, there we go. Let's see. You wanted number 17. No, you wanted number that's right. On the Scotch and Spirits, you wanted number 22.
Yes. One of my favorite songs in the world.
All right.
Coming Right Up.
And here we go.
I love the sound of breaking glass. Destruction. When there's nothing new. Oh, nothing new. Sound of breaking glass.
we're back here on Mouthful and talking about Smart Talk about food, wine, and farming on this, the 20th anniversary of this fine show. Our host, Michelle Anna Jordan, is going to tell us about how Mouthful got started and maybe some of your most vivid memories of
sure,
the show.
Sure. And let me tell you, if you're just tuning in, we are not having the usual celebration that we like to have on Mouthful's anniversary, partly because I've been under the weather, we will say. Just haven't been feeling well the last couple of days. Got some weird thing. Thought it was food poisoning, but it's dragged on for 4 days, so maybe not. We are going to have a celebration that you can come to. You can take part in probably the first Sunday in February at the Spastopol Grange. We will be talking more about that as the date gets closer. Going to make it really fun. There's going to be dancing. There's going to be a little mini market. We'll be recording a Mouthful show. So how did we get started? It was... well, let's see. It was October of 1995. That is so scary. So scary. And Robin Pressman had just been made program director. And Scott Murray, old friend Scott Murray, was general manager. And Robin called me up and had me come in. And she said, I want to do a show. And she had been reading my book that had just been out for, I guess, 5 years, A Cook's Tour of Sonoma. And she said she wanted me to make it like the book. And the book really focused on all the different agricultural and farming industries in Sonoma County, a close-up on some of them and an overview of how it had evolved. And then with recipes, it was my very first book. I look at it now and I think, oh, it's so naive. But
We
have to start somewhere. It was a product of its time. It was a really exciting time. So... I walked in like 2 minutes before the show was going to start, misjudging how long it took to get from my house in Sebastopol to the station. So we corrected that fairly quickly. And I had been my passion had always been radio. But it was as a listener. There was no way I ever expected to do radio. That was not something. I was a listener. I wasn't going to do it. I used to look at the little tiny board we had and think if I touched the wrong thing, it would blow up.
I think everybody does that when they first start.
Yeah, and I didn't engineer it when I first started, and it was so tiny. I could only have one guest at a time. I think a couple times I had two, but I mean, it was really tiny. Tiny broadcast quarters in this little dinky trailer. And then they started jackhammering outside the trailer. They were doing some construction here. It was before this building was where we are now was built, but they started using a jackhammer. And so we had to close the door.
Oh, and I'll bet it got really hot really quickly.
It got really hot really quickly. And our engineer was, it was all one room sort of divided up with partitions. And so there was the engineer, there was Robin, there was me, there was my guest. And I think we used up the oxygen in the room. And so we got into the habit. After about, I don't know, maybe 2 months, I started bringing in music to so that we could take, we could open the door. Mm-hmm. We couldn't open the door while the jackhammering was going on. So we had to put on music. And then open the door, get some more oxygen in. And I remember the first song I played was Tom Waits' Eggs and Sausage off of, the one with Heart of Saturday Night Live on it, that really early 1972, I think. And I got a phone call. I got a phone call about the song, and this woman, I don't know where she lived, but she'd never heard Tom Waits before, and she was so excited. And so after that, I started playing music, taking one or two songs each day for each show, and, you know, getting our oxygen. And then we moved over into this building in what is now, we now have 3 broadcast studios, I guess. Is that right? Yeah, we have 3. And the smallest one is where we were broadcasting from, and it was still pretty little, and it was still during the day. But at that point, the station was all classical music during the day. And there, Robin's idea was to have shows from noon to one. There was a show about poets and writers. There was Charles Sipos, Curtain Call. And then I forget what the... Oh, there was... I can see... I'll think of it in a minute. Anyway, there were shows every day at noon. But the people who were... the large portion of the members, they did not want their classical music interrupted. They didn't want to hear talk.
In the middle of the classical music.
Right. And so we had lots of conversations. And about a year into it, or thereabouts, is I think it was about a year into it, we went to Sunday nights for Mouthful. And all of the other shows went to different times except for Charles Sipos. And he stayed... until I think just last year, he stayed until he stayed at noon. And partly, you know, his show really tied in because he covered a lot of classical covers.
Right.
He's still here.
Right.
He covers a lot of classical music. So his show fit right in to that format. So,
well, personally, I think this works very well because, I mean, if you think about it, you're talking about food, wine, farming, right around the dinner hour.
Exactly. Exactly. And we went to, just earlier this year that we went to six,
right,
instead of seven, and I like that much better. It lets people get pay attention to their Sunday dinner, and I think that's important. You know, Sunday dinner is important. Dinner is important every night. So that's how it started. And then I think it was by the second year or the third year of Mouthful, actually got we submitted a show to James Beard Awards, and we got a nomination.
That's great.
Which was astonishing because we were up against shows from all over the country that had budgets. And Mouthful has never really had a budget. The only money that's really been involved with Mouthful is what I spend. I've been a volunteer for 20 years, and yes, I think I'm crazy.
That's true of most of the KRCB FM shows, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. There's almost all the programmers you hear who are local are not paid. It's, you know, a volunteer effort. So I've been a volunteer for 20 years. And some of the people, I've had Alice Waters three times, I think. I interviewed, and some of these are, I don't think I ever had Alice in the studio. I may have once, but I did on location.
Or on location or phone interviews?
No. I did phone interviews for a while, not with Alice. I don't like the sonic quality of our phone, so I don't do phone interviews anymore. But no, I would have a live show and pre-record it and then broadcast it. So I did that with Alice two or three times. I've had, did that with Julia Child and Jacques Pepin, which was just so great. Thanks so much to my dear friend, John Boland, who's now president of KQED. He was having an event at Kendall Jackson Winery with Jacques and Julia, and he asked me to be the interviewer, and he gave us permission to record and broadcast. It was really great.
How fun.
And then I've had Eric Repair, who has Le Bernardin in New York, and you may have seen him on some of Anthony Bourdain shows. He's been on very tall, very handsome, extremely nice French chef, wonderful guy. Jacques Pepin has been here in the studio several times. Eleanor Coppola was a great show. Eleanor is so well-spoken, so articulate, and she had just come out with a memoir, and they got her here on her book tour. I was very happy about that. Judith Jones is an amazing editor out of New York. She, her first job in publishing, if I have this right, I think she was working in France, in Paris. I could be wrong about that part, but her job was to look through the slush pile, which are all the manuscripts that have been submitted that no editor has wanted, and they're rejecting them.
Right.
And her job, her entry-level job, was to go through the slush pile and see if she thought there was anything worth saving.
So basically be the second pair of eyes.
Or the third,
or the
fourth.
15th.
Yeah. And one of the books that she pulled out of that first slush pile was A Diary of Anne Frank.
Wow.
And then she was the author who published Julia Child's Mastering the Art of French Cooking.
Mm-hmm.
She has just brought some amazing works to the world. And she wrote a memoir about that. It was fabulous. We got nominated, got our fourth or fifth James Beard nomination for that show. And then she's recently come out. I haven't gotten this book yet, and I'd love to have her on. She wrote a book about feeding her dog.
Really?
Yeah. And she said, if you love your pets,
feed them well.
Cook for them.
Yeah, right.
Cook for them. And that's what I do for my pups. We're laying right here happy after a home-cooked dinner.
Well, you know, one of the things that occurs to me as I'm listening to you say this is that in many ways, one of the missions that you serve, maybe that's not the right word, but anyway, the benefits that you bring to the community are that you actually connect people with some of these famous chefs that they will never have occasion to see or to read. And even if they don't, say, have a television, they're listening to you and you're passing along some of the lessons that you've learned from these people. And so they're actually getting a condensed version of everything that you've learned from everyone.
Well, thank you. I try to do that. I definitely try to do that. And for me, I think TV is a very passive medium.
But it has its place. There are visual learners out there.
And not just that. There are great things about television, absolutely great things. But when it comes to food and to really getting someone's personality, I don't think the best way to do that is on television. If you want to be empowered, my complaint about the Food Network and such things is that it has made people to a large degree feel like cooking is difficult. I mean, all these Iron Chef SmackDown things, I think it's disempowered the viewer rather than empowered them. And so one thing I like to do is I like to help empower people.
The concern I have about them is that many times a chef or a cook on TV will they'll have a half an hour show and they'll start with preparing this dish, and at the end of half an hour they take it out of the oven, and it probably takes a lot longer than, you know, it's kind of like CSI and the crime problem.
Yeah.
You know, the police have described this where they think the public perception is, well, you should be able to solve it in half an hour because they do that on CSI. I think cooking shows somehow have set the same expectation.
Yeah, and the next time if you watch a cooking show, here is how you should visualize it. You don't see much below the countertop of where they're cooking usually, especially if it's one of those standard like PBS. There's the counter. They're standing there. They're talking to you. They're chopping. You need to visualize the 5, 6, 7, depending on who the chef is, people that are on their knees right beneath the camera, handing up, there's a team of people in the kitchen doing all the prep. There may be 3 or 4 different plates of the same thing, 2 or 3 different versions of what's being cooked. And they're right there. And when the camera goes one place, they're pulling things off the table, wiping it up, and putting it back on the table, putting the new version back on the table. I've done TV.
By the way, those of you who have children, this is a great opportunity if your children have shown any inclination towards wanting to know what goes on in the kitchen. You can tell them to pretend that they're on a TV show and they can be down there.
There you go.
Handing things up to you.
That's a great idea for how to get kids to help in the kitchen. Though I do find that kids up until they're about 12 like to help cook.
Right.
And then some continue, some don't. But,
and some teach themselves.
Yes. I taught myself. No one taught me to cook. I taught myself from the time I was 7 or 8.
My mother taught me to cook, but she swears I taught myself to bake because she never baked.
My mother was not a good cook. She was a widow, and she
had no time.
No, she lost her spirit for it. She lost her spirit for pretty much everything. She didn't work. She didn't cook. She laid on the couch and watched TV.
Oh dear.
So, but I had a palate. And I enjoyed cooking, and so I've always cooked.
And I realize we're coming up towards the end of the hour, so we want to make sure that we recap the information about the events that you're
doing. Oh, good idea. Thank you.
So people have a chance to participate in them.
Yes, thank you. That's a really good idea. And I also want to ask you to do something. So first things first, next Sunday I will be at the West End Farmers Market. The market opens at 9:30. It continues until 2. And I'll be there with my books. I will be there with yummy things to eat. I will be there for conversation, questions, whatever you want to talk about. And then, and that is free. The books aren't free, but you come and say hi, have a taste, have a nibble, ask a question. Just say hello. And then on November 10th is my dinner. It starts at 6:30 at Spinster Sisters. If you want to come to that dinner, you need to go to bookpassage.com and then look on events and you will find me there. And then you'll be hearing more about it. But on November 27th, it will be the Good Cook's Holiday Bazaar at Worth Our Weight Culinary Apprenticeship Program, and I'll give you lots of details. Now, what I wanted to ask you to do, Mouthful has a Facebook page. If you haven't liked it yet, maybe take a minute to like it. But more importantly, what would you like to see from Mouthful in the next few years? What kinds of things would you like me to talk about? You want to see any changes? Any topics you want me to cover? Just go onto Mouthful's Facebook page and make a comment there. I think you just go to Facebook and enter Mouthful, and it should pop right up. And if you don't, if you're not involved with Facebook, no problem. You can always write to me, email me at catsmilk@sonic.net. catsmilk@sonic.net. If you see other email addresses for me, everything right now is forwarded through catsmilk@sonic.net. And I just have to say, Dane Jasper, I love you. Thank you for Sonic. It is such a great company. And is that an hour?
Yes, it is. Unfortunately,
that's an hour. You know,
end of our time here.
Robin was smart when she asked me, because the one thing that I can do almost any time, I can talk.
Well, we've all been certainly the recipient of the beneficiaries, I should say, of your advice and expertise and insights about wine, food, and farming here in Sonoma County. And we want to encourage everybody to coming back next week at 6 o'clock, when Michelle Anna Jordan and Mouthful will be back on the air. So in the meantime, thanks again for sharing all of this with us. It's been a real pleasure, and we'll look forward to hearing you and your guests next week.
Thanks so much. And I just have to go out on the note of saying, I wish my second grade teacher, Mrs. Kelly, could see me now. I got in so much trouble for being a chatterbox. She was always threatening me to go to the principal. I was going to go to the principal and get whipped. Look at me now. I'm doing something with it.
There you go.
Grapes are covering the grassland. They're buying up old family farms. They're selling out. Who can blame them? Wine's a cash crop growing strong. And in the fields of Pendleton Valley, buildings sprout up like new sown seeds. Now they call it Telecom Central. Is what consumers need. I am the hand that rocks the cradle. I am the voice that sings this song. I am the one called local color, salt of the earth, but not for long. Take a look, 'cause I'll go. The gamblers in this brand new gold rush, and moving in all of it.